Guillermo just informed us during the break that he owns an acre on Mars. All of us were very confused by this. But before we get to the alleged acre that Guillermo owns on Mars, I just want the audience to have a sneak peek behind the scenes, lest you think that Greg Cody's general incompetence is an act. I wish we were televised so that you could see how his son is just made to feel great shame at how his father just can't do the most basic things, like make a sound so we could get the joke. Like, but he just stared at us for 4 full seconds, and I swear, if we had sat there, it would have been 40 seconds, because I have no idea what Greg Cody was doing as we tried to get him on the Hard Network out, and he had no earthly idea where we were in the show. Stugatz, how did you experience this?
I experienced your frustration. I understand why you are frustrated. It's just Greg Cody being Greg Cody. Most of the times it works out, his awfulness. Sometimes it does not. I think what happened there is he got unlucky again with a piece of paper going over the mute button, which would be the second time in an hour, which is a record for a show for Greg. It's unlucky, Greg.
Well, I did an analysis, and what happened was I did everything right, it turns out, because the reason was I was took a split second to make sure that I was unmuted. And then I was a split second away from talking when the Hard Network out hit. So
see, that to me is the most frustrating part about him, is that he did it. He ruined the end of the segment, and then he goes on pushing forward like nothing wrong. This wasn't on me. This was just bad timing.
Well, he always defends it. And the reason that Stugatz could tell that I was frustrated is because I took off my mask and threw it at the Zoom camera. So that's the reason Stugatz wasn't exactly a sleuth there. I was just sort of staring at Greg Cody as Greg Cody stared back at me silently for a full 4 seconds, where he thinks that that is good radio. And I can't really argue that silence is often better than Greg Cody talking. So put it on the poll, Guillermo, at Lebatard Show. Is silence better than Greg Cody talking? Now let's review why it is that he has this job. A half a century of journalism scoops that I imagine are going to be pretty pathetic. Number 10, Greg Cody.
Number 10, a Dolphins linebacker goes on the record for the first time about his financial and marital woes, depression, and past cocaine use.
Who was that?
I'd prefer to tell you off air, because he still lives in the area, and I don't, all these years later, I'd rather not throw him under the bus and have him.
Didn't you already write it in the newspaper?
Yeah, but it was like 1992 or something.
Right, but it's still there. Like, we could just find out.
Couldn't we just do a search and find out who you're talking about? Must you make everything difficult? Tony, look up for us. Let's betray Cody right back. Number nine.
First reported, the Fort Lauderdale Strikers plan to move on from coach Cor Vanderhart after the season, despite reaching the Soccer Bowl. They did.
That's a big scoop right there.
Number eight.
You got it.
Number eight might not fit the list exactly, but wrote the infamous Trade Marino column in 1993. The Dolphins would go an additional 7 seasons still with no Marino Super Bowl ring.
Wait a minute. You said to trade him and keep Scott Mitchell. That's not a scoop. Like, you went on a local television newscast with your voice and face altered because you told Miami that they should trade Dan Marino. You were like an FBI informant being interviewed on Channel 10 by Frank Fort.
That's exactly true. That was a great moment. But over time, I have turned out to be right.
They pixelated his face.
It's like a retroactive scoop.
It is not right. It's not a scoop of any kind. Yes, Billy. Number seven.
Eldest son Dave Shula, in my podcast, The Greg Cody Show, shares intimate details of his father's sharp decline and final days.
Oh, dear God.
None of these are scoops.
No, and that one was macabre. That one was morbid. Like, you shouldn't be taking credit for that.
It happened.
So one of the greatest scoops of your life was a couple of months ago.
That's right.
But his son did a bunch of interviews that week. You weren't the only one to get those thoughts.
I didn't hear any other interview with Dave Shula in which he said what he told us.
All right, number six, Greg Cody.
Reported that pressure from mothers against drunk driving was causing Marlins to quietly move away from plans for a statue in honor of deceased star Jose Fernandez.
These are macabre. Number five.
On decision night for LeBron James, accurately reported the Heat briefly pulled a planned full-page Welcome LeBron ad from the next day's Miami Herald over concerns he might change his mind before reinstating the ad just before the paper's deadline.
Dan reported LeBron was coming here.
How can anyone verify that they pulled it and put it back? You just said that they pulled it, but it printed anyways.
They did. I knew from people who worked at the Herald.
What'd you do? You just went down to the printing press and asked them? Like, that was the scoop?
I had my sources.
you just called the Herald's advertising department? Like, what kind of scoop is that?
I had my sources. What can I tell you? I will not reveal my sources.
You won't even reveal the dolphin that you publicly told us was doing cocaine.
I will tell you off air, and if you think it's okay to say it on air, then we'll go ahead and do it.
You wrote about it!
But I didn't name him right here.
Oh.
I mean, I'm not like...
But you named him in the column, did you not? I mean...
Of course I did, yes.
Okay, so...
But you quoted him in the column sharing these details with you.
It's true.
So you're protecting him 28 years later?
Yeah, shouldn't I? I mean...
But you already put it in the paper!
It's a delicate subject. I don't...
Then don't put it in the paper!
Like, well, but 28 years ago, it was obviously with his understanding and everything. But 3 decades later, do I want to rehash all this publicly and name him? I don't know.
Wait, but you got his approval at the time where it probably hurt him and stung him and harmed him the most. And now 28 years later, you have reservations about revealing who it was?
I do promise to reveal it to you guys off the air. And then if you think it's...
Number four, Greg Cody.
I report a column following a controversial 2006 Dallas playoff loss to the Heat that Mavs owner Mark Cuban was heard shouting at Commissioner David Stern, "Your league is rigged." Cuban denied it. Days later, the NBA fined Cuban a then staggering $250,000 for acts of misconduct on the night of that game.
Did you report that exclusively, or did other people also hear him say that? Was that an exclusive scoop?
Well, I think you know who the source was. And I don't think anybody else reported it.
Number three, Greg Cody.
Won APSC National Large Circulation Award for Best News Story for an expose on growing conflict between athletic and academic interests involving Miami Hurricanes football.
I wrote that.
You did not.
Yes, I did. What do you mean?
It must have been a different story. This was written by me in like 1988. It was me and Ronnie Ramos, actually. I should have given them credit. The two of us.
Number two.
Reported via a club source that increasingly dissatisfied Dolphins owner Stephen Ross was considering an in-season coaching change in 2011. Tony Sperano was fired soon after.
And finally, the greatest scoop of Greg Cody's half a century in journalism is...
Thrilled to break the joyous news of Dan Lebatard's engagement to Valerie.
Scott Van Pelt to join us in about 15 minutes. ESPN Radio is presented by Progressive Insurance. Progressive Commercial is proud to partner with the small business experts at SCORE. Access free online resources through SCORE Small Business Resilience Hub at score.org. Dan, it's time for Straight Talk. It is brought to you by Straight Talk Wireless.
All right, so we work here at the worldwide leader in sports with a lot of access to instant information. You should know that the Greg Cody column that he wrote about a Dolphin player talking about his cocainey past, and he didn't name the player in the last segment. We had a team of people working on trying to find that column. I will read directly from the chat where all of these people are working. Are you ready, Stugat?
Yep.
This column is so buried, we can't find any evidence of it online. Then someone else writes in the chat, was it Alfred Oglesby, Lawrence Phillips, Cecil Collins? Then someone else writes, Chris Forster made this hard to find because he's the offensive line coach. And when you type in Dolphins and cocaine, that's what you get. And then you just get super difficult. Yeah. And we are still waiting to find out because the internet does not have any proof yet of one of the great scoops of Greg Cody's career. We are waiting to find out whether that scoop was actually a scoop, because did it happen if the internet has not recorded it in any way and a team of researchers and archaeologists can't find it because it's so old.
But I did share with you the secret word that gets you to that column. Secret word.
Did it work? Because I don't feel like, did we find the column? Has the column indeed been found by anybody? What is the secret word? It's not cocaine. It's not dolphins. What's the secret word?
Should I say it?
What?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
The secret word is piano.
Ah, the missing key.
It's the key. Yes. A key to finding the story.
Yeah.
Yes. Thank you. All right. Let's do this. Let's do Greg Cody's Back in
what?
My Day.
And now it is time to take a trip down memory lane. Here's your guy, Greg Cody, with Back in My Day.
That was Greg Cody coughing. That is indeed a piano player.
Fishing. What is the allure? I don't get it. Never have. Tried. Gave it a shot. Oh, thank you. When I was a kid, I did the Tom Seaver thing for a while. My brother, Uncle Dick, 9 years older, used to drive me out west to the bombing range many times to try to teach me fishing, to will that I would grow to love the pastime as much as he did. We'd stand on a creek bank, cast our lines, and wait. And wait. And wait. Nothing. I realized immediately why they call the sport fishing instead of catching. You get all excited when you think you might have felt the faintest tug on your line. That's how desperate you become. God, who invented this? It's a test of patience is what it is. Watching paint dry is an action sport compared to fishing. But then another time we went north to Loxahatchee, sat on a boat, and I discovered that sometimes catching fish is the only thing worse than not catching them. We caught a bunch of needly gar and fat mudfish and threw them all back. Why don't we eat them? I asked my big brother. I don't like fish, he said. Huh? What a bizarre sport. I get it if you're dropping a line from a cane pole and bringing home bluegill for dinner, but otherwise, what's the point? I read that in the NBA bubble outside Orlando, they've stocked Lake Buena Vista with a ton of fish to enhance the enjoyment of bored quarantine players who've taken to picking up a rod. It's a fair trade-off. You have to spend months away from your loved ones in a bubble in a pandemic, but you get to post a pic holding a fish on social media. Overstocking a lake to amuse tourists reminded me of the time I went fishing for halibut in Alaska on a charter boat. The majestic fish, white as snow, were so prevalent, they limit how many you can keep. I began to feel like I could actually like this sport as long as I didn't have to bait the hook or at any time touch the writhing fish, let alone unhook it, kill it, or fillet it. Are you insane? The charter captain was a guy who looked like Quint from Jaws. I imagine all the charter captains get together at the end of the day, funnel whiskey, and make fun of tourists like me. I will cook the halibut, though, if you hand me the clean fillet. Halibut's the best. Remind me to give you my go-to recipe sometime. We had the halibut I caught in Alaska packed and shipped home. I estimate the meal we got out of it cost me about $475. Next time I go fishing, it'll be at Publix. I'll point at the catfish and say, give me 3 pounds of that, please. Fish without fishing. Now that's the sport for me. I'm Greg Cody, and that's how it was back in my day.
We've got Scott Van Pelt next. Stugatz, how do you feel about Uncle Dick?
Oh, I love Dick.
Put it on the poll, Guillermo. Is Los Angeles overrated at Lebatard Show? Yes or no? Because that overcrowding is a total nightmare. I like better where SVP is right now. He's in San Francisco, the PGA Championship at TPC Harding Park. is this week. Thank you, as always, Scott, for making time for us. What kind of lengths and precautions do you have to go to even get to San Francisco, never mind broadcasting from there?
Well, it's like everything else at the moment, right, Dan? I mean, it's, you know, you get on airplanes and you're wearing masks, and you get here, and I quarantined for a day at the hotel there, got a test and waited for a result, and I wasn't to go anywhere. Unfortunately, I did take a trip to In-N-Out because that's what you're meant to do if you're from the East Coast and you're somewhere where you can get one of those hamburgers. I did that before I knew I wasn't supposed to. But I just went to the drive-thru, and I don't think I did anything wrong. Got my test. It was negative. That meant I was then allowed to come out here. But even here, it's, you know, people are doing what they've been instructed to do. People are keeping their distance. Everyone's got masks, except for the time where they're doing what I'm doing right now or when we're on the air. And it's, you know, it's interesting to see the way these protocols have been implemented in a way where it feels still odd, still feels foreign to us, and yet it's what you just sort of reflexively do. You know what I mean?
Super irresponsible. He's a menace to society, this guy. Yeah. He needs a burger so badly. I don't know if you've seen it, Stugatz, like the schools in Georgia where you've got all these people with no masks in a hallway. Mm. That's Scott Van Pelt going to get an In-N-Out burger because he can't help himself because he's got an addiction.
Dan, the line to the In-N-Out at the drive-through was it was into the street. So there were many of us there. I had my mask on. They had masks on at In-N-Out. I ate the hamburger. I tested post-burger, and here we are.
Still super negative.
Doesn't make it right. I mean, Think about Rinaldi. I mean, Think about everyone else.
Think about everyone else. Think about the entire network, Scott Van Pelt. You're taking everything you have and going to Washington with it. You're going to infect everybody because you had to have one of those tasty burgers.
Negative. Test negative. I'm great.
Are you going to get more burgers now that you've tested negative? Like how dangerous?
No.
Like what?
No, I won't. I'll send someone or something. I don't know what I'll do. It's just any East Coast person that gets anywhere within a 50 mile radius of that big giant yellow arrow is just drawn to it like a moth to a flame.
Tell us more about your order. Give us all the specifics. Put it on the poll, Guillermo, please, at Lebatard Show, even during a pandemic.
You go 3x3. You go 3x3, Dan, because a double-double is not enough, but 2 double-doubles is gluttonous. So you go 3x3, which means 3 patties on a bun, which is a lot of food, but it's you know, I'm a big guy. I could take care of that. So that's the Stanford Steve order. He spent a great deal of time here, obviously, at Stanford, so he's the one that helps me understand the order. And Steve says you need to eat the fries first because the fries, a lot of folks don't think are very good, but if you eat the fries first, then they don't taste as dry and as plain post-burger. So that's what I did.
So do you eat the fries in the car?
Of course. Yeah, you sit there in a car and you eat like an absolute animal. I talked about it through the years with Rosillo. Watching me eat is one of the most horrifying things you could ever do. But me eating that in a car in a parking lot, I mean, just think about it. It's just so it's such a sad scene. And in the middle of a pandemic where, as it turns out, I wasn't meant to do it, but I did it. I mean, you know, it's all so sad.
I love the idea of somebody who watches ESPN thinking that you're this glamorous network star and looking into the car next to them. I imagine a rental car. I imagine that ESPN's not letting you get a good rental car. And there's lanky, bald Scott Van Pelt with all sorts of triple patty burger on his face.
Just annihilating, just housing a burger, not even stopping to breathe. It's just a horror show.
Wait, Scott, did any ketchup or mayo find its way to your clothing? Anything?
No. It's like central vac. It's like a HVAC with like really, really strong pull, man. Like nothing. There's no, what's it, detritus? Like there's not even a crumb, man. Nothing. Nothing.
How about the napkin situation? How many of them were there? How many were used? Because you can't eat a burger like that without napkins.
No, they give you a good wad of them. I'd say there must have been like 5 or 6 just balled up. But then me again, like I don't unfold one daintily, right? You know, I use the whole wad of them in my hand like a towel. You know what I mean? It's just, I'm not painting a very pretty picture here, but this is, at least it's accurate.
Is your wife horrified by how you eat?
I do better when I'm in her company. I mean, I don't eat like that in front of her. But I mean, this is I'm by myself in a rental car, like doing doing off the radar stuff that I wasn't meant to do. You know,
anything goes. I mean,
yeah. I mean, it's already a little bit questionable activity to start with, so I'm not as concerned when I'm solo there.
Chris Cody gave a thumbs up there in the middle of that interview. You too, Chris Cody, are someone who eats differently around your wife than when you're in private.
Oh yeah, I'm the king of like the second dinner. That, like, my wife has no idea about. Scott, you know that move?
Yeah. I think you try to put on airs around certain people. But, I mean, again, in this setting, it was it was as I described. There was no glamour involved, no.
So can you tell us about the specifics? Do you have any idea, like, what this is going to be like? Golf should be safe, right?
They've done an amazing job. And this is the PGA of America, and PGA Tour Commissioner Jay Monahan from the beginning has said, look, we're going to test aggressively. We'll probably have positives, which they have had. And they have sat the guys down, and guys largely, as I understand it, those who have tested positive in the past were asymptomatic. And they, as soon as they tested negative, they were able to come back out here, and they have done a spectacular job. And it works because, unlike, say, the Marlins, where you have a team, these are independent contractors. You're outside. You can keep your distance from one another. And they've done a great job on the tour. Now, this week, it's different only in the sense that the trophy they're playing for is more significant. It's a major. Anyone that would suggest, well, there's an asterisk, well, that just feels like a reflexive reaction to anything that's done now isn't the same. Well, I would disagree with that. I mean, this is the same course where they're going to play. It's the best players in the world, and low score still wins. Obviously, not having fans takes a bit of the atmosphere away and the ambiance and the stress, I would think, and the tension. And I was asking some players about that yesterday, and they said, yeah, there's something to that. But your question was, you know, is it, it's essentially the same. I mean, golf's been able to do it because of where they are. You're not indoors again. And they have been out here since mid-June. And I think they've done a spectacular job in how they've tested and how they've kind of moved forward in the face of it all.
Scott Van Pelt with us here on ESPN Radio. Check out SVP's new podcast, SV Pod, wherever you get your podcast. Scott, what should people, he's always the story wherever he goes. So Tiger's played one tournament since the PGA Tour has come back here. What should people expect from Tiger this week? I will take him just being in contention, Scott, but I have a feeling that's a stretch considering how little golf he's played.
I think you're right. I mean, I don't know how you can expect him to play well when he just hasn't played at all. And, you know, you can, I'm sure I'll be guilty of, you know, saying, oh, here in the President's Cup, he was 5-0 and he beat John Daly in a World Golf Championship event here. That was, you know, more than a decade ago that happened. And sure, it's nice to show it at a place where you played well, but basically anywhere where Tiger has ever played, he has at one time or another played well. Right now, you're talking about having played four rounds of golf basically, you know, this calendar year. I just think it's unreasonable to expect that he would play well. As I speak to you guys right now, it feels like it's about 55 degrees. There's this fog and wind and a bit of mist. And with a bad back, you know, that certainly didn't help him last year at a couple of the venues where they played majors where it was cool. You know, his back has been bothering him. He's been honest about that. So, I mean, look, if he plays well, it's never a shock. But if he played well here this week, it would be surprising simply because he hasn't played where so many of these other guys have been playing a bunch since they came back out.
Is Bryson DeChambeau likable?
I mean, for the fans, yeah. The guys on tour do a lot of eye-rolling with him. And I think it's good. I think the fact that, like, Brooks Koepka basically is all but calling him a nerd and like, trying to, like, rub his hair like a big brother, and they constantly are kind of jabbing at one another back and forth, I think that's kind of fun for golf, that there's almost like a wrestling, you know, sort of a feel to it. His play, I'll say this, yesterday, I was walking with a number of players, and he is a topic of conversation. Like, when a tour player who's won majors says, hey, have you seen a guy hit the driver yet? Oh, this is on the range. I said, no. He goes, go watch. Like, they don't talk about people like that, Dan. Like, they don't speak about people like, go watch the sideshow. And another player just said what he's doing is astounding, and they speak of him with awe, but they all kind of wonder, can you keep doing it? Can your body stand up to this? And because he's just, he's quirky in terms of like all of the different ways that he looks at sort of the physics of it. He's got all these numbers that he's crunching that they don't. I don't think he's beloved by guys. This is just me saying, using a lot of words to say, I don't think a lot of guys are particularly fond of him. But I like watching him. I think he's great for the game.
The SV Pod is available wherever you get your podcasts, and he will be available in San Francisco, PGA Championship, TPC Harding Park. It's this week. Thank you for being on with us. Always good catching up with you. You haven't started yet. Forgive my ignorance. You haven't started yet in Washington with the studio show, have you, or am I an idiot?
No, you're not an idiot. Well, those are two different questions.
He's an idiot, Scott.
In this case, you're not an idiot because, no, we haven't moved. Actually, right after I get back from this, we pack the stuff up and head south, and we'll be on from D.C. sometime in late August. On or around the 24th is what we're eyeballing. So I will see you all from there then.
Looking forward to it. He does an exceptional job. As always, thank you, Scott.
Always fun, boys. Be well.
Ron McGill going to join us here in 10 minutes if you want to talk to him. 786-456-4837. The Codys were arguing about America's sweetheart, Katie Ledecky. Where are you on this, Greg Cody? Where, I want to know if your son, how close he has gotten to, you know, accusing her of fraudulence on the air. Where are you on this?
I'm pro Ledecky. I watched that video. I was amazed by it. I think it's perfectly legit. I think it was a glass of milk that did not spill. Now, granted, she was going fairly slowly, but I thought what she did was just a fantastic exercise in her talent and athleticism.
Is there any particular reason you didn't explain to the audience what she was doing, which was swimming with a glass of milk on her head? Are you assuming that the audience knows what you're talking about?
I thought I referenced the glass of milk, but I thought everybody did know because it's the most astounding video I've seen all week.
So your son is doing some reporting on this, and what has he discovered?
Okay, I want to be fair to Katie here. What she did was very impressive. Okay. Now she takes the glass of milk and she puts it on her head. Now, the part that I'm skeptical of is that I believe there's some sort of magnet or some sort of thing there that is keeping the cup from sliding from side to side. Her swimming, because it's even impressive to me if it's magnetically sealed to her head, not spilling is still impressive. But Tony, I believe, is claiming that it is just her balancing the cup on her head with no magnet at all or no cup holder of any kind.
That's right. She is completely freestyling the glass of milk that is sitting on top of her swim cap. So that's the thing, too. Maybe what you're not seeing, Chris, is that those swim caps are really they don't slide often. So that's something that you're not, you know, putting into perspective there.
Scott, one of the things that I always find interesting, because everyone listening to this right now is someone who loves sports in some way. Everyone listening to this is someone who watches sports a lot, and yet we consistently underestimate the level of expertise of all of these artists that we are watching. Like, we consistently fail in our assessment of being properly awed by what these people can do with their bodies.
We do, but we probably, especially Olympic champions, because I'm with Chris on this, we probably trust them more than we should and give them the benefit of the doubt because they are such superior athletes. Listen, she might be the most accomplished swimmer we've ever had, but there is no way she did this without some sort of trick. I don't care how good you are at swimming. This is not swimming. This is a magic act. I mean, this is insane.
I don't think she's our most accomplished swimmer. Is she? Is Michael Phelps our most accomplished swimmer?
I mean, something Phelps to keep in mind here. This is a TikTok promotion for Got Milk. Anytime I see TikTok being involved, I think there's some funny business here. Let me be clear. It's still impressive what she did, but I am skeptical that that cup was not being assisted at remaining at the top of
all right, head. Stugatz is taking yours, though. You are diluting your take. You are not willing to make the accusation directly. You're simply copping to some skepticism. Stugatz is taking your take, and he is pushing it out further. He is totally okay taking out an American sweetheart, accusing her of cheating. I don't know why he's okay doing that. Why are you okay doing that? Billy, what's happening here?
So you're questioning whether or not the milk was real, but how do we know the pool was even real?
Wow.
Good question.
No, it's not a good question. It's Billy just fouling up the end of the segment while sitting there eating, stuffing things into his face and rushing to the microphone. Meanwhile, Cody is desperate to get in here. What could you possibly have to say?
Well, I don't want to feed the
It's Dan, Stu, and Greg Cody on ESPN Radio.